This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
And welcome back, boys and girls, for another special edition of the Michael Deacon Program. Oh yes, we are live and direct right now on YouTube, and later heard all around the world. Oh, it's true. Joining us here in a moment is Mr. Leo Zagami, no stranger to the program. He's a man who needs no introduction here. It is definitely not his first rodeo on the program. It definitely won't be his last. Now, without further ado, let's get down to business, folks. Oh, yes. Let's turn that off and get right into it here with the guest, Mr. Leo Zagami. And I believe, yes, he is ready to go. Let's bring him right on in. Leo, how are you?
Very well, and thank you for having me on once again to your wonderful show, and we have so much to talk about since it's been at least a year or more.
Yes, it's been a long, long time, Mr. Zagami, and welcome back to the program. Now, Leo, as a preamble, I wanted to discuss your new book and, of course, what's going on with Israel and Palestine, and I'm sure we'll tie all sorts of things together here, but first and foremost, let me also say this. I can't believe I missed you over at Contact in the Desert a few months ago, Leo.
Well, I think I saw that you went there, but I was around. I was around. A lot of people to meet, of course, and it's been always an interesting event, especially after 2 years where it was actually closed down because of the pandemic. We had the possibility once again to gather together. So a lot of old friends to catch up with.
Oh, yes. It was a great time. I hope you enjoyed your time out there, even though it was really hot, even though we are used to the weather. It still gets pretty damn hot out there.
Yeah, it was a really hot summer. That was only the start there.
Oh, yes. And that was back when the UFO topic was red hot, and now it seems to have really diminished yet again. And I'm aware in your new book, Confessions of an Illuminati, Volume 9, you wrote about Cyber Satan and the alien threat. I thought we could sort of talk a little bit about that before we get into everything else here.
Sure. In this book, that is actually a book you can read without having read the other ones, so a book that kind of lives in a dimension of its own, I try to explain how the whole Cyber Satan plot, which is manifesting daily and more in our lives, is actually connected to the UFO phenomenon. And I had already discussed in volume 7 of my confession the retroengineering being at the basis of the AI. But I developed further that concept to explain to my readers the implications of that. I already mentioned in volume 7 the fact that in the 50s they came out with the AI concept after reverse engineering UFOs, and then there was, of course, everything that happened since June. But actually the timeline of this disclosure goes to the beginning of this year. It's been kind of like a well-orchestrated disclosure, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah.
And in the end, I was capable of inserting really the latest and the whole timeline of events that brought us to the revelations that, of course, are still discussed to this day, but it seems like they have somehow, after the initial interest, put it back in their closet. They don't want to. They don't want to let us know more. Most of the time, when we discuss this kind of subject, and you have seen it yourself, coming at contact in the desert, it seems like the most of the people are interested in the whole abduction phenomena, yeah, or maybe simply on what these UFOs are in the sky, if we can see them, if we can actually catch them with our naked eye, and without really instead explaining the implication of reverse engineering, which is actually kind of, I mean, it's disturbing once you understand that reverse engineering and alien threat are a real thing. So in this book, which is made up of 7 chapters, I focus in particular on chapter 6. I wanted to explain how the Cyber Satan alien origin. And when I talk about Cyber Satan, you know, this is a term that I coined for volume 6.66 of my Confessions a few years ago. And it's a term that I continue using because I think that the AI will ultimately manifest Cyber Satan, will ultimately manifest Satan's will to bring us towards the mark of the beast. So in step 6 of my confession here in volume 9, which is of course a very important book because it also brings you not only the latest discussions and of course the testimony that has been given, but also talks about what has happened actually at other levels of the academic world with maybe less known figures that are still very important and relevant for what they have said and for what they have published recently. And in this context, so I didn't only focus on what David Grush said, the veteran and former member of the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency and National Reconnaissance Office, which, by the way, I think that since his revelations, what happened has been also an operation to try to ruin his character, a character assassination, yeah, also complete propaganda. What's your take on that?
Well, I find that rather interesting, but that's what they do to everyone out there. If they don't like what you're saying, you will be hit with a hit piece like what happened to him. Yeah. And it happens much more often than we'd like to admit.
Yeah. And unfortunately, you know, I've been myself in the past, unfortunately, subject to that kind of treatment because of my revelation. So I know exactly what it means to be a whistleblower and to actually bring stuff of importance that, I mean, first of all, it all kind of unveiled from the week of when we were at contact, basically, kind of like from that moment onwards, the week following that event, it started to really hit the mainstream media. And what I've been focusing on already since the beginning of the year was this gradual disclosure that seemed to creep in. And in the end, I mean, David Grush's incredible revelations on reverse engineering that became public in June 2023 confirm also the possibility that we are in front of a real Operation Trojan Horse, like John Keel used to call it. And John Keel was actually made a book called Operation Trojan Horse. So what I say is, what if the AI is an alien trap from the very start? This is what I already wrote in Volume 7. So it wasn't like I was. But what I added here is much more detailed. And of course, an understanding of what is known as the Fermi paradox, because Fermi paradox is actually a name that is taken from the American Italo-American physicist Enrico Fermi, who was amongst the creators of the world's first nuclear reactor. He was involved with the Royal Academy of Italy with Benito Mussolini, but eventually he would leave Italy when the situation, of course, got unbearable with fascism. He would leave Italy when they promulgated, they started with the infamous racial laws in 1938. But before that, he apparently might have been involved in the cover-up of a UFO crashing that happened in Italy before it even happened in Roswell.
Yeah, this is what I heard.
And because the guy who actually brought the documentations that I've actually published in my book to the Daily Mail, Roberto Pinotti, who was actually, he's a UFO expert, but he used to be also in the Italian military, and is the co-founder of the CUN, the Italian Center for Ufology, National Center for Ufology. Well, because he's a long friend of mine, he also, of course, used to be a Freemason himself, and he actually used to be part of my political party back in Italy. When I ran for the elections, he was also one of my running mates together with me in this project, a political project of mine. So Roberto is a very serious person that will not bring out any documents without having without knowing they were genuine. And he actually got some of these documents analyzed. And what are these documents about? So then people understand a little bit better what I'm talking about. There was apparently in the early 1930s a UFO crash in a place called Magenta in Italy. At that point, of course, because it happened in 1933. Benito Mussolini was in power. They kept everything top secret. And there is actually documentation that were brought to Roberto's attention. And Roberto, of course, published and talked about them. This documentation is basically Mussolini's office ordering to keep silent about the soul discovery. And then there is also a reference to the super secret Gabinetto RS-33, which RS stands for Special Research, and the 33 cabinet, which basically involved probably a lot of 33 degree Freemasons, because contrary to what people think about Mussolini's involvement with Freemasonry and after his the fact that he participated to the persecution of Freemasonry, which is partly true in 1924-25 on behalf of the Jesuits at that point. But he actually himself raised to power thanks to a group of 33 degree Freemasons who placed them there and nominated Il Duce and were part of this quadriumvirate. It was known as the quadriumvirate. So I've already talked about Roberto Pinotti in volume one of my confessions, if you remember.
Oh yeah.
And I've like I said, I did also some conferences, numerous conferences with him. So when he brought to my attention this this unknown event that happened in Magenta, Italy, well, it was very interesting because apparently between 1944 and 1945, there was actually this UFO was then transferred to the Office of Strategic Services that will become later on the CIA. And in turn, it will reach America and New Mexico where they were doing all their experiments. So what happened here is that the Pope backchanneled and told the Americans that the Italians had this UFO, and they ended up scooping it up. Now, That is not even my words. Those are the words of Grush, the whistleblower, who has also mentioned this UFO crash that happened during Mussolini's time. So it's very important, I think, that I expose this this UFO crash in Italy, because then one of the protagonists of it might have been the very guy who coined the term Fermi paradox. Now, how this term was called, I don't know if you know about it, but the Fermi paradox is basically a way in which Enrico Fermi, he was basically sitting down, I think, after lunch, you know, like the Italians like to brag and talk and stuff. And at one point, he basically said, if they are, where are they? Where are they? No? Why can't we see them? Fermi paradox is basically considered now the discrepancy between the lack of conclusive evidence of advanced extraterrestrial life and the apparently high likelihood of its existence. Now that we know that Enrico Fermi probably knew very well about the UFO phenomenon, because he was involved with the first UFO crash that happened in Italy. And that's for sure, because he was a member of that very high-level scientific milieu there in Italy. I think that the paradox assumes a different kind of connotation, because it happened during a casual conversation in the summer of 1950 with fellow physicists. There was Edward Teller, Herbert York, Emil Koninsky, and while having, you know, while walking to lunch, I think, so not after, but actually before lunch, the men discussed the UFO reports and the possibility of faster than light travel. Now, during this conversation, Fermi said, "But where is everybody?"
Right. Where is everybody? I ask the same question all the time. And early on during the whole abduction phase of the early part of our history, in terms of abduction cases, you know, it started off with the whole Age of Aquarius sort of movement, the hippie movement going on in the 60s. It all started off with this subject of love and peace and protect the universe and all this sort of thing. And it sort of slowly got really dark after a number of years. The abduction cases got really, really graphic after that. And of course, a lot of people believe that these aliens will be our saviors, Leo. They think that they will come down here and sort of turn off nuclear reactors like they did in the past.
First of all, I think that it wasn't really, I mean, either it was a case of synchronicity or either there was something more to it. The fact that, you know, just the last day or after the last day of the contact in the desert, which, as you know, is one of the most important UFO conferences in the world.
Right.
There was the start of this unveiling of David Grush's revelations that seemed, you know, quite incredible.
Sure.
But still credible, because he is a Pentagon whistleblower and a former member of the WAP task force. So, you know, one takes him seriously. But he talked also about interdimensional beings. And that is very interesting, because also it connects with, as you know, all the research and the work which I myself published already with the Invisible Master and my previous publications. So I think that the fact that finally we start hearing, but I think that what happened this year was the normalization of the whole thing.
Ah, yes. A lot of stories like, we heard from in the past, obviously, but this time it was coming from Grush, like you mentioned, someone who is credible and legitimate, in my opinion, even though the media really tried to scrape him through the coals, saying that he suffered from PTSD and other things.
But this happened after.
Right, right.
It happened after he was pushed by all the media.
Sure.
As a credible source, after there were some very serious journalists who gave him credibility. So later on, you know, once they have, and then especially after arriving in Congress with this whole thing, because eventually it became a matter of national security that needed to be addressed. But I think in the end, the thing was that they kind of, they wanted to just normalize the whole thing. Because nowadays, you know, after you say something like this, you know, UFOs were found within these, you know, dead bodies and were retrieved, reverse engineering has been, you know, he basically lifted, I mean, he kind of like finally unveiled everything that we knew was true.
But right.
It's, and then, you know, to actually now criticize him and corner him and as a madman after he was working at the highest level of the intelligence world here in the U.S., also close to the current administration, it seems pretty weird.
Oh, it does. It does. And some people of the Pentagon believe that these aliens were demonic. They were demonic entities. I thought that was rather interesting. And I know you yourself believe slightly in that as well.
That is something that I already discussed.
Sure, yeah. You talked about this.
Invisible Master, because it is a topic that, of course, I exposed for many, many years.
Oh, yeah.
Many years. And I was actually one of the first people to actually explain how, you know, we should look into the whole phenomenon with an occult perspective, because that gives us a much wider understanding. And so I think that when the people will read my book, they would see that actually, you know, there has been, first of all, this year, a very particular chain of events. We had this congressman, Tim Burchett, who talked about reverse engineering alien technology also. And he did it basically a few months before David Grush. And then we had other people that were willing to testify about their own experiences. So I think that it's important to understand that they are trying to normalize the phenomenon. And, you know, we have, of course, to explain to people that these things are always been with us for thousands of years, that we used to call them gods, we used to call them angels, demons, but they are now with us. And we are trying to interpret them in the light, in a more technological way. But still, it's when I heard back in March this Tennessee congressman making this shocking claim that went almost unnoticed at the time about recovered UFO technology, well, it also brought up to mind the fact that the actual recovering of material from crash sites and potentially aid the reverse engineering of advanced technology is something that the actual Congress has already discussed for a long time. I remember when there was this discussion in, I think it was in December 2021. So it's kind of developing, you know. They're trying to normalize, but the fact that there is a rapid response team within the Pentagon and it's involved with these UFOs and that the whole truth is now coming out. Well, I think that is not a coincidence. The thing that we had all those, you know, videos and objects recorded during training exercises of San Diego in 2004.
Right.
And then off the East Coast in 2015, these so-called tic-tac-shaped objects, and the fact that, of course, now a lot of politicians were interested, even like Marco Rubio, or Lindsey Graham or others interested in knowing what this technology is all about and if it's terrestrial or extraterrestrial. And then you had also that other guy from that from that music group who turned out to be also film director, and he works for the UFO disclosure. What's his name?
Oh, you mean Tom DeLonge?
Tom DeLonge.
Yeah.
He made even a movie recently.
That's what I saw. I didn't see that, but I know he released one. It is interesting that
I saw the movie. Yeah, saw the movie, and I actually find it very interesting.
Really?
Yeah, because it was done, of course, with a touch of humor. Sometimes, I guess.
That will help.
I think it tended to normalize subjects, which we have always discussed in more close circles, and give it maybe a more poptastic appeal. And it was a bit of a crossover between, I don't know, Ghostbusters and something to do with the UFO world. But in the end, there were actually elements that he inserted cleverly within the whole story that were absolutely serious elements. And I think that he is definitely also part of the whole disclosure. He works for it also.
I agree. I think a lot of this is definitely not a coincidence by any means. It's all synthetic, in my opinion, Leo.
No, it's all organized. I mean, right. In fact, there was, gradual. In mid-May, for example, we had the Stanford medical professor Gary Golan that caused a stir during an innovation and investment conference hosted by the Salt Eye Connections Leadership Forum, when he stated, that a small group of scientists had been reverse engineering alien technology for quite some time. And he did it, this is a Stanford medical professor. And so this is not just, and I think that it's quite shocking also that you have entrepreneurs, people that are involved with science and technology that are actually talking about it. And it's not accused of being a quackery or something crazy. It's actually presented now in serious, Nolan, he made some innovative breakthroughs in immunology, in virology, in cancer research. So it's not just any kind of guy. So I feel that was very, very interesting. But also there is another guy that right when after the contact in the desert and when Grush started his own thing, in the same time, and this can't also be a synchronicity. I mean, either is an incredible synchronicity or either there is something going on. Is another guy I talked about in volume one of my confession. Is called Martin Rees. He's an astrophysicist. Is related to a guy who actually was my mentor in Freemasonry, Julian Rees. He's a member of the Royal Academy, whatever. And together with his colleague, Mario Livio, like I explained in Volume 9 of my Confessions, he exposed the possible alien agenda behind the AI in the prestigious publication Scientific American. I don't know if you heard about that.
Oh, yes. Lots of people definitely believe that this does come from the outside, not from us. This transhuman agenda comes from the ETs themselves.
Yeah, a lot of people might think that, but this is a very serious astrophysicist and very important member of the academic world who titled this paper, "Most Aliens May Be Artificial Intelligence, Not Life as We Know It." And that is talking about human intelligence may be just a brief phase before machines take over, and that we know. That may answer where the aliens are hiding. Actually, saying that alien intelligence is hiding in this AI that is fully developing. And as you know, in my book, I talk about quantum computers,
right?
Because they will be the next phase. And so I also talk about the Quantum Prince of Darkness, referring to the famous John Carpenter movie.
Which is always nice to get into that subject matter here. You talk about Cyber Satan, and I agree, we all must bow down to our new gods, and you claim by 2030 the elite will turn into gods, Leo.
Yeah, well, that's their plan. You see, they are aiming to rebuild a new Atlantean world order by using the AI. And the AI, of course, also, once it now we are still not really understanding this whole thing of the quantum computers. But I explain in my book, this will be the beginning of the digital divide. This will be the beginning of a new feudalism, because quantum computers can only be afforded by billionaires. They are computers which cost millions, that need cooling system, a very complex cooling system. You can't simply purchase a quantum computer. But once you have one, you can break into every single crypto, blockchain, whatever. Basically, the day after you have one of those monsters, you can say bye-bye to the whole cryptocurrency.
My goodness.
Because you can break into every single password blockchain in the world. No problem with a quantum computer.
Damn. I need one of those, Leo.
Well, like I said, it will only be, like I explained in my book, it's something that nowadays, you know, they have only either in military bases or at the headquarters of IBM. And there was a visit which Joe Biden made last year, which I also talked about in my book, and showed also the picture of it, a picture of it, which also shows how the quantum computer looks more or less like the quantum Prince of Darkness of John Carpenter, which found itself below the church, and that manifests all kind of crazy things. You remember?
Oh, yeah.
So what happens here? It happens that when you have a quantum computer, the digital divide starts. You know, people like Elon Musk can have a quantum computer. People like Bill Gates can have a quantum computer. People who are, even people like maybe Obama can have a quantum computer. What does that mean?
Maybe like Jeffrey Epstein can afford that.
They can basically, well, Jeffrey Epstein, I don't know if he's still around. Maybe somebody says he's still alive.
Right. And by the way, futurist Ray Kurzweil also had predicted that humans will achieve immortality in a few years, Leo.
Yeah, that is something I wrote also in my book. And right, I explain what does that mean. There is two types of immortality.
But Leo, let me just quickly ask you, would you take that pill yourself? Well, a proverbial pill. Would you want to live forever is what I'm asking you.
No, it's not of interest, because I understand that both what they are basically presenting us with two options. One is the mind upload technology, which apparently is already functioning and some might even already be using.
I believe so too.
And the other is instead the micro robots inserted within your system that can take care of your health, basically. And that Ray Kurzweil, I think, points more on that kind of technology, tell you the truth.
I believe, that's much more what like Michio Kaku also talked about back in the early 2000s, about downloading the human consciousness through like a, you know, through a computer, your
well, it's
memories
something that we also see partly in the sci-fi thriller Transcendence.
Sure.
Where Elon Musk, by the way, made a notable cameo like in Volume 9. And so you have that kind of merging of neuroscience and technology. Then you have also, you have micro things that can be inserted in your body and can maybe take care of all your cancers, of everything. And then, of course, can extend the life of your body indefinitely.
Would you like that, though? Like, you know,
no,
your knees are messed up, you take that, you're good to go?
Nothing, no. There is nothing that...
So screw all that, in other words.
Yeah, well, I only follow the natural course of life, because I know that all these things are built with compromises. I'm not somebody who is in any way a advocate for transhumanism, in any way.
No, I understand that. I just was curious your take, and I feel like
you
we're...
See, most of the Illuminati are obsessed, and that's what I
show yeah, they
in this
are.
Book,
yes,
with
they are.
Immortality, you know? And they have always been obsessed with mortality. So The omega point, as Pierre Teilhard de Chardin, this important Jesuit, used to call it, which Ray Kurzweil calls the singularity event, is the moment in which, you know, the we are starting this merging to achieve immortality. And of course, those who want to do it would probably, those who want to do it will not be able to do it. Only the ones who are really rich will be probably initially able to do it. The ones who maybe in the future will be able to do it will be still part of this system. They will be the ones who will marry into transhumanism, depend on transhumanism. They will become post-humans. I want to stay a human.
I feel like we're gonna see a lot of people going down that road. As you know, people that really do want to achieve immortality are insane, Leo.
It's not a question of insanity. Achieving immortality is one of the oldest things for mankind. I mean,
well, sure. Like, look at Hitler.
An obsession.
Yeah.
That they had since in ancient China. They had in ancient Rome. They had everywhere. I mean, it's like the obsession with immortality has always been a constant. With the Philosopher's Stone, that's what they wanted to obtain, immortality. Then you had, of course, the obsession with wanting to materialize gold. But in reality, the real obsession has always been immortality.
Right. Specifically, I'm referring to those that have the actual needs. They actually have the needs and the funds to actually go through it all. Those people are generally insane, the ones that have enough money to actually go after it. There's people that want it, but they don't have the funds to actually go do it. Two different classes of people. But
the ones who have the funds are probably sold to the devil.
Oh, yes.
To that point.
Absolutely.
I mean, they probably yeah. arrived to that point by with a series of compromises that not everybody will do.
I agree. And Leo, let me just ask you this really quickly. What do you make of these people that are just sort of finding out about you? And as soon as I referred to you that you were going to be like on the program, I got hit with a number of emails wanting me to ask you, what does one do to sell their soul? I'm not quite sure why so many people have been asking me that subject or that matter, rather, to various guests. And Leo, they think that you know something in their minds.
Okay, so first of all,
go ahead.
We finish with the subject that we discussed, and of course, we discussed the possibility that they want to achieve immortality either with nanomachines housing intelligent power injected or implanted in humans, or either with mind transfer. Regarding the selling of the soul as it was used to be done back in the days, in this book of mine, of course, and I talk for direct experience because I was part of the Illuminati, I was part of secret societies that some of them made some pacts, some particular pacts, no? With entities. For example, Aleister Crowley himself, when he wrote the Book of the Law, he channeled an entity which some say was Lucifer himself.
Mm.
Now, when it comes down to the actual deal with the devil, here in this book in particular, actually I discuss this subject. I don't know if you know that, but this book in particular is one of the and I explain how some people have made sacrifices and things to achieve this aim. Regarding me, personally, in the past, I was involved in the magic of Abramelin the Mage, which was a ritual that lasted many months. I, of course, did occult rituals and all that, but then later on I exorcised myself numerous times to expel all those demons in some way, and this I explain also in my books. I explain in particular regarding the exorcism, also I talk about in volume 6.66. I talk about it in volume, because that is a book in particular that deals with the subject of exorcism, as well as talking about it in other books of mine. I went through an exorcism in the Islamic tradition, one in the Christian Coptic tradition, and one in the Catholic tradition. So I kind of like experience exorcism in various traditions. I think that playing with magic is very dangerous. To actually willingly start to deal with the occult inevitably will mean that sooner or later you will encounter the devil, or you will encounter and you will be proposed something. Having said that, most people with magic, they ruin themselves. They ruin themselves and they are not able after to bring back some sanity in their brain, because right. at times it's very brings a lot of chaos.
I'm wondering if these are younger individuals out there asking me these questions, Leo.
I think one thing that many times I saw that people don't understand. They are curious of things.
Yeah, they're totally green about this.
Think they can maybe achieve some things.
Yes, that's what I think.
And it's sad really that people want to take shortcuts like that, because it means that life has not offered them anything good.
They're willing to go after it, though. Yes.
I dedicated a whole chapter in my new book about the Faustinian pact, the Faustinian bargain. Now, the Faustinian bargain is really the classical deal with the devil, the classical deal which at times, is made at the crossroads, as I've discussed also in Volume 8 of my Confessions. For many artists in the music business, this became quite popular. But the Faustinian bargain is a subject of great importance because it can be applied to a single person, or it can be applied to a whole group of people.
Right. And by the way, as you were saying that, and you said musicians, in the video I'm playing right now, we're seeing a video of musicians who are definitely into Satan, no doubt.
Mm. Well, there is many that are into Satan. Other who have simply sold their soul to Satan, like Bob Dylan, for example. I mean, I don't see Bob Dylan as being particularly satanic, but the way that he then achieved his talent is dubious, and apparently is connected to the search of that myth that I discussed in Volume 8, brings you to the crossroads, brings you to make a deal that will bring you talent. You know, suddenly you have a musician with no talent and he becomes the best guitar player in the world. Now, It is also said for Jimi Hendrix that he was possessed when he was playing.
He was possessed.
Yes, that's where he took that immense talent, and because of the possession stage that he was in. As a normal being, he might not have had all that talent, if you understand what I mean. So, I mean, how you conjure Satan and his buddies is actually a subject that I discussed in Volume 9 of my Confession, is the title of one of the subchapters of Chapter 4 of my Confession. So if people are interested in wanting to know what kind of ritual, but at their own, like I explained in my book, it's not like it always works. It doesn't always work.
Right. And you could cause yourself a lot of trouble trying to get it to work.
Yes. Yes, I remember. I mean, one of the most funny things was once this Freemason guy came to me and said, "Leo," but he was a bit. This guy was completely out of it. I think. I mean,
no.
he had tried every way possible and imaginable to conjure things so he could benefit from them.
Yes.
Another time, there was an even stupider guy who told me, "I bought a kit on the internet. I ordered, spent $2,000 to sell my soul to the devil." And I was like, "What?
Oh no!"
This guy was even more stupid.
So yeah, people really go after whatever they want, even if it means the worst, and for them to have, the worst things happen to them. in the process
Let's talk
of it.
About, about the Faustinian bargain. Now, this is a concept that I think is important. You sell yourself to the devil, but then you go to hell.
Yes, that's one thing you need to keep in mind, folks. Yeah. But yes, the ongoing conflict with Israel and Palestine has basically overshadowed everything. And of course, when this first occurred, Leo, I didn't want to flat out just say this is a false flag. You know, I wanted to wait a little bit, wait till the smoke clears. And initially, my mind, of course, went back to 9/11 and, of course, what occurred with COVID. Israel and America have the most sophisticated technological superior surveillance equipment of all the land. Yet all of these events just occurred, Leo, and the world has been fooled again, in my opinion.
Yeah, of course. But in fact, it's like a part of the never-ending wars that are all part of the package of the Great Reset, which is this Faustinian bargain, which is in this case not a singular one, but a collective one that all these people have done. Because all these people who are trying, like you and Noval Harari, but also all the others in Davos and all these people are simply thinking that they can achieve everything and anything with what the AI is offering them. So they are literally, they have sold their soul to achieve this this magic, this technology. In a way, we can say that that reverse engineering, where it, does it come from? It comes from objects which are piloted by entities which are interdimensional, which of course can be also and are most of the time demonic. Now, I don't say that all of the times they are demonic, but most of the fallen angels are demonic at least. Now, Timothy Alberino, which I cite often in Volume 9 of my Confessions, who is a friend who has published a book called Birthright, he says, you know, this technology could not necessarily be evil because when you have a car, it doesn't mean that the car is evil. It depends who is driving that car, with what intention that car is driven. And the same can be applied, of course, to a UFO. Regarding though the Faustinian bargain, in my book I explain how things have changed in the concept of a Faustinian bargain for the Illuminati with the version of Faust put through by Johann Wolfgang von Goethe. Goethe was a Freemason and a member of the Order of Adam Weishaupt, of the Order of the Illuminati, and he is like not putting us through the usual story that started to circulate from the late medieval times to that regarding Faust and then put together by Marlowe. In his version, there is actually a bet with the devil. So it's not anymore like you're saying your soul and you will be destined to hell. In the end, with this bet, and the fact that you can almost fool the devil, they think that bargain will not bring them to hell. I don't know if you understand what I explained.
Oh, yes.
The concept. It's like with the Illuminati, they have changed the whole Faustinian bargain concept, which, by the way, was born in Germany. Remember, there is things that the Illuminati are born in Germany. The Faustinian bargain is born in Germany. The Rosicrucians are born in Germany. Many, the Thule Gesellschaft was born in Germany, and then later on Nazis is German. As well as, you know, we can say that important elements of the communist revolution came from Germany. Germany has always been a place of great philosophers, great minds, but it's also a very dark place, a sinister place, where there is some very dark forces that maybe not many people know about. I talked about them a little bit in Volume in Invisible Master, because then they connect with the castle of Wevelsburg, where Himmler made his headquarters for the SS.
Yes, and this is also why I always recommend your books to everyone out there who's getting involved in all these sort of things. I tell them to buy the series. It's fantastic. And by the way, for those who don't know, what exactly motivated you, Leo, to get out of the Illuminati and become a whistleblower of sorts?
Well, this started a long time ago. As you know, I started my exposure in 2006. And it was in the fall of 2006, after I had been threatened in June 2006 during a meeting I had with the representatives of the Monte Carlo Lodge in a monastery near Lucca. And after that, especially some internal problems that we had within the Monte Carlo Lodge with Comandante Giorgio Ugo Balestrieri, who, by the way, a couple of years later proved to be a crook, and he was actually put on a Interpol list, and he will be eventually arrested after a few years after kind of running around the Middle East escaping. Because for people who don't know what I'm talking about, I was a member of the Monte Carlo Lodge of the P2. The P2 was a very influential lodge within Italy that was eventually exposed by a scandal known as the P2 scandal that you can find all about. Now, the P2 Lodge was eventually dismantled in Italy, but it survived outside of Italy in the Principality of Monaco. And that's where I was initiated and I was a member of. And that's where I also started an order called the Ordo Illuminatorum Universalis. Now, this story is well known to the people who have followed me, of course, for many years, and for the people who have read also, of course, all my books.
Right. But a lot of newer listeners out there, Leo. I'm kind of surprised. I have no idea where these people came from, but they're all interested in you.
Well, I'm glad.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
I'm glad. Oh, yeah. I guess that people have to understand that in 2006, I made a choice because I found myself, I was living in Norway at the time in Oslo.
Yeah.
I was actually a high-level member of the Monte Carlo Lodge. I was in charge of also keeping their the list of their members, which is it's a very important job to actually have all the list of their members and everything, because they wanted to keep it even outside of the Principality of Monaco for security reasons. So for a period of time, we brought it to Oslo. And at one point, though, I got we had this important reunion in Lucca. I talk about it in, I think, volume 2 of my Confessions. And in this reunion, it was me clashing against this Giorgio Ugo Balestrieri, who had left Italy after the P2 scandal. He had moved to New York. He had become the head of the International Rotary Division. It's basically the number one Rotary club in the world. It's the International Rotary Division at the United Nations. They offered me, I was challenging him. I said, listen, I'm not happy with what is happening with the decisions that are made within the Bohemian club.
Oh, shit.
I wasn't happy with certain things that emanated from members of the Skull and Bones.
So you put your foot down, in other words.
Yes.
I see.
And that was the moment in which in front of, and there were about 100 people. I mean, it wasn't like, there was a lot of witnesses for this. I actually published even the photos of this event in my book. It was an event, an official event, in which I attacked this Giorgio Ugo Balestrieri. Arrived from New York, he was an asshole. Basically, he wanted to he wanted initially to convince me that I could be well off if I stayed silent. Mm. He would give me an office at the United Nations. So that was pretty big proposal.
That's a big deal.
That's a big deal.
It's a big deal, yeah.
I think that most people will have probably accept.
Yeah, they would have folded.
But I didn't. And I actually saw it as almost the last temptation of Christ kind of thing. Like, you know, like in the desert, like when he's in front of the devil offering him all the riches of the world. I felt in that way. And in fact, that's what I wrote at that time, I remember. And I said, no, I'm not accepting that. And that was the beginning of a lot of problems for me. Because I went back to Norway. At the time, I was married with this Islamic woman who was the mother of my child.
Oh, okay.
About to become the mother of my child. And my child was born in July 2006. But I started to realize that I wanted to come out of this whole New World Order scenario, and I wanted to instead put my son first, and also I wanted to expose these people, which I really saw as bad people. And so I came to my mind the idea of opening up a blog and putting all the documents which I had on it. And I published the blog in the fall of to the beginning of the fall of 2006, and in the matter of 1 month, I got the intelligence operatives at my door with the police threatening to take my child, and basically telling me to my face, "You have to close down this website."
Wow.
So I was on target. I knew at that point I was on target.
Madness.
Now, I went on with my project, but then also the family of my ex-wife got involved, because the brother came to me and said, "You know, these people are after you. You could just stay silent. You will have a lot to, you know, they will give you things if you stay silent." Said, you know, this guy basically was a policeman, the brother, and said, "You know, they offered me a position in the intelligence. If I betray you, I sell you off. You are at the moment, you are in a very bad situation, because you are intercepted. Everything you are doing is being intercepted here in Norway. Just give it up." And I said, "No." And at that point, actually, he just convinced his sister, my ex-wife, to leave me and take his child, my child, with her. And I never saw my child again.
And to this day, Leo, have you seen your child at all?
Never. So I made a choice here. I said, no, I stand by what I'm doing. I want to expose these people. I started that process by publishing all those documents. I didn't want to backtrack. Now, when they made that first threat initially, it was November. I remember they came at the beginning of November 2006. There is actually, I think, still an interview probably that you can find around the internet with me and my former wife, where she was reporting about her experience with these people arriving, the police, everything. She was still on my side. But then they offered their money, they offered their tranquility. I don't know what they offered her, but then she betrayed me. And then I was accused of espionage in Norway in 2008. So then it became really bad, the situation for me, because all my assets were frozen. I was back in Italy with no money, and it was really difficult. And on top of all that, I had all the trolls of the internet.
Oh, boy.
And also the hackers had, you know, I had a website and they immediately tried to hack it. I had moved the content from one Squarespace. I was kicked out of Squarespace, which I was using for my first blog.
Right. Yeah. I remember Squarespace. Yeah.
Yeah. And then 24 hours later, I managed to transfer it. It was the actual owner of Squarespace that contacted me back then. Imagine that. And said, "You have to immediately close down this, and you have 24 hours. So I passed on all the stuff that I had on the website, on another website with a friend of mine in Italy, a provider in Italy, and then in the small republic of San Marino, which became basically the carrier for the other website. And then at one point, I didn't even have a website anymore for a few years, because I was betrayed by this guy here in America who had said, "Don't worry, I registered for you the LeoZagami.com." But in reality, this guy was a military intelligence guy. And he basically did it on purpose so he could get away from me.
That's unfortunate.
And then it took me a few years to get
back. Shocked. I'm not at all shocked to hear that happened to you.
Well, a lot of things happened in that period. But in the end, though, I was resilient. I, of course, with the help of my new wife, which later became my new wife, we went to Japan. I managed to publish my first books in Japan. And later on, I started to publish my books in Italy. But I also had problems when I started to publish my books in Italy. They didn't want my books to be published in Italy. I had people from the Vatican coming to me and offering cash on the table.
Oh, my.
I discussed it in volume 3 of my confessions. There was this guy from the Vatican intelligence, Antonio Leonardo Montuoro, who one day called me out of the blue and said, I'm from the Vatican, I work for the Vatican, we would like to have a chat with you, and blah, blah, blah. And they literally offered me money, saying, well, we will open a bank account for you. You will become the grandmaster of one of our recognized orders, and you will have no problems as long as you don't publish these books in the Italian language. And of course, I went along with it for a few months until I published them. Of course, I didn't have a publisher, and so I didn't care. But once I had the publisher, I also made sure I found the right publisher. And at that time, it seemed to be the right publisher, but the guy wasn't really understanding that this book would be so successful. In fact, after a week, he called me up and said, "We the first 1,000 copies just went out quickly, so quick. We need your approval for other editions." So I said, okay. But eventually, those books were the books that became, you know, the whole series of Confessions of an Illuminati. And it was all great until, of course, I didn't want to get those books to become also a revolutionary act and enter the political arena with them. At that point, then it became a problem even in Italy. And so then, you see, in 2019, I had to flee Italy because the laws they have in Italy, they don't permit you to publish whatever you want or say whatever you want. It's not, you don't only get a lawsuit, you get a criminal lawsuit. It means that you get arrested for what you write in Italy.
Right. So obviously you're glad you're away from that place. Far away, yeah.
Absolutely. In fact, I remember the last few months I was in Italy, I wouldn't even post anymore on my social networks in the Italian language. I would only post in English, and I wouldn't even have an Italian show of sorts. Nowadays, I have my Italian show. It's very successful, but simply because I'm out of Italy. Otherwise, if I go back to Italy, I'd probably be arrested.
Right, and that's what's happening now. No, people getting arrested for posting things online in other countries, basically.
Yeah, but here in America, we still have the First and the Second Amendment.
Luckily.
Which are great, and I'm very glad to say that hopefully within this year, I will probably achieve my American citizenship, and that will be final for me also regarding it would be great for me also regarding the fact I can abandon and cease to be Italian in any way possible. You know, it's like at the moment I still have this link to the Italian Republic, but these are crooks and their constitution operates in a way that you still have to obey it even if you are on the other side of the world.
Right. And Leo, are you at all afraid of the repercussions that you might face for putting out all this material that you've been releasing throughout the years?
Well, I already suffered the repercussions. I
had an
accusation of espionage. I mean, I think that makes my point.
Absolutely.
Mean, everybody makes it.
Sure.
That was lifted, fortunately, in 2010. And then in February 2010. And then after later on, I never saw my son again. So I think I paid quite a lot for what I did.
I agree with you on that, but you don't ever fear that these people might come after you again?
Here in America. At the moment, I'm well protected.
Okay.
I remember the president of Italians for Trump. I had also a political involvement by being the first person outside of the U.S. to actually be involved in the organization of a very big supportive group of people that then also helped Trump during his election, the whole Italo-American community here in America and so on. I mean, organization Italians for Trump was a very important organization. It was recognized actually by the Trump administration after when we did we needed his offer of office. We did an incredible event in Rome in front of the American embassy, another one in front of the Italian parliament. If you go in Google, you can see Italians for Trump, Leo Zagami on Huffington Post or on every publication. I mean, it was a serious thing.
Amazing.
Nowadays, I'm not really that much politically involved. I'm kind of living in a secluded environment here in America. I'm not really, but you know, I hope that things can change. And I'm definitely supporting the candidacy of Donald J. Trump for 2024.
And by the way, Leo, I'm sure some people are wondering, do you identify as a Christian nowadays?
Well, yeah, of course, I always identified as a Christian. I might have had in the past agnostic Christian approach, which was an erroneous approach, but that is really the belief of the Illuminati, the agnostics. And within Gnosticism, and that's why I suggest you get this book, Volume 9, because you can find all about it in this book, what the Gnostics, Gnostic heresies are all about. But of course, nowadays I consider myself a traditional Christian, and in a way also a Catholic, because I'm still a Catholic. But if I'm a Catholic, I'm definitely a pre-Vatican II Catholic. So what they call today a sede vacantist, meaning that you don't believe that there is actually a pope that is a legitimate pope at the moment in charge. Having said that, I think that personally the organized institutions around Christianity are all corrupt these days. So it doesn't really make sense to support one or the other.
Right. And I was just going to end the interview with that question in terms of your thoughts and opinions on the Pope. But I think I sort of know where you're going to go with that.
Yeah.
My goodness. Well, Leo, once again, I do want to thank you for being a part of the program. Yet again, if there's anything you'd like to plug, the floor is yours, my friend. Go ahead.
Sure. Well, you can, of course, go and check my latest articles at leozagami.com. And also you will find there the links to my latest books, including Volume 9, but also all the others. Like I said earlier, Volume 8, the past book, is more focused on the entertainment business. And I would say that you can also read that without really reading the others, because it's mostly focused on the importance of exposing the entertainment business, which in itself also I find very important and relevant nowadays. As I have lived here in California, in Southern California, and I've also had direct experiences with Hollywood and so on, I think that people need to understand the importance of how the show business is connected to all the propaganda that is building up on the rise of the Antichrist. But with Volume 9, of course, we are going one step further. So I thank you very much today, because we were able to discuss maybe parts of the book which I haven't discussed with other interviewers.
Very nice. Very nice. Once again, Leo, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure, and I will talk to you on the other side, my friend.
Thank you. God bless.
God bless. Take care. And there he goes, boys and girls. That was Mr. Leo Zagami. Hope you enjoyed that one as much as I did. And yes, it's a bit of an early show for us here over on this side of the table. Great show, Michael. Well, thank you, Max. I appreciate that. I appreciate all of you guys for hanging out with me here. I know it's a little bit early. Kind of early. It's about 2:19 p.m. Pacific Standard Time where I am. And my God. It is that time where I have to get going here, boys and girls. I got a lot of stretching to do. Yes, the back is not 100%, by the way. It's still a little off, but the stretching has been helping. And yes, thank you, Mr. Jelly. Yes, that's always quite frightening when you're here on my side trying to do a show and you're seeing the little avatars. And I see this weird sort of clown. Odd enough, I was watching Killer Clowns from Outer Space, by the way, the other night, and now I see a clown. Quite scary, in my opinion. And of course, folks, the fun doesn't just end here. You can sign up right here on YouTube, become a member, or on Patreon. That's patreon.com/Michael Deacon, and that is where gold falls from the sky. Lots of great shows there. Oh, yes, Max. I love that little clown there. Yes, it's a clown world, by the way, and that's what's going on right now. All over the place. So many clowns out there, folks, and that's what we get here in the year 2023. My God. The year's almost over, by the way. How time has flown by, folks, and this interview has flown by yet again. And my goodness. Much love and respect to all of those on YouTube, and of course, those who will listen to the podcast rendition later on. Yes, that's what you guys gotta do. If you can't listen live, definitely check out the podcast version of this program. It's worth it, I promise. Yes, get that now. Sign up, folks. You will need it. No more listening to the radio. Listen to the show and spread the word. Don't be afraid. Please go to michaeldeacon.com for any updates and sign up to the newsletter, the very important newsletter. Make sure to disable whatever pop-up blocker you have on your browser and sign up today over at michaeldeacon.com. And yes, I agree with you. The artist formerly known as Asuka, radio is dead. That's why you guys got to listen to this program and stop listening to radio. Don't be afraid. Spread my name. Spread the show. Spread it like a virus. Don't be ashamed. The Michael Deacon program. Spell it right and send it to your parents. Once again, boys and girls, my name, in fact, is Michael Deacon, and wishing you well from Hell Centro, a place where you don't want to be, a place that will break you. Oh, yes. Stay safe, everyone, no matter where you are on this island Earth. And with that said, the world is a mysterious place, and life itself is a mystery. Until next time, good night.
Transmission now.
The Order of Chaos.